Galaxy Not So Far Away, a Mysterious Galaxy podcast. I'm your host, Becca.
And I'm Gary.
And today we have with us Jenny.
Hello.
And Nick.
Hello.
And we are going to be talking about time travel today.
Very excited. We, you know, kind of tiptoed a lot around time travel stuff when we did our historical fiction episode last time, 2 weeks ago. And so I'm very excited to, like, dig into some of the time travel shenanigans today.
Yeah. I felt like when I started, like, doing my topic research that I didn't have too much to talk about. And certainly my list of titles is much smaller than yours, Gary. But
sure.
I realized that I was really limiting myself in what I was considering time travel.
Yes! Oh, Becca, I'm so happy you're saying this because I did the same thing. When I think of a time travel story, it's so easy to jump to something like Back to the Future or, I mean, like Terminator, right? Like, we're going to send a person through time and we're going to change events that have happened. But that's really not the only circumstance in which, like, time travel can become, like, a pivotal plot point in a story.
Yeah, I saw that you had Life is Strange, the video game, and like as soon as I saw that on your list, I was like, you know what? Absolutely.
Yeah, so Life is Strange and also Prince of Persia, these both fall into the same sort of thing as far as, so I think right off the bat we should just say that, like, it's going to be really hard to stick just to books for when talking about time travel, because I feel like I've experienced, at least for me, like, I'm a big fan of time travel and have, like, pushed into stories in all different mediums, but, like, In Life is Strange and in Prince of Persia, one of the core mechanics of the game is that your player character can rewind time, you know, like, not an extravagant amount of time, but like 30 seconds, a minute maybe, and can redo events. So, like, you can have a conversation with someone that doesn't go the way you want, or you can get into a fight with an enemy and lose that fight, and you can reset that, go back and fix the thing you already did.
I love that mechanic in Life is Strange.
Life is Strange, like, is so good.
I was just, like, always getting into arguments with, like, minor characters and then having to rewind and be like, maybe I don't fight them about every little thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That one's also, like, without spoiling too much, there's a lot of, like, really heavy topics that Life is Strange gets into. There is a particular character, I redid her end of the episode mission, like, 3 times because I really wanted to have, like, a good outcome for this girl.
Yeah.
And it was hard.
Something, I definitely agree with you on the, I'm not going to be talking too much about a lot of books. Like, there's definitely some manga and some different, like, novels here and there for me, but a pattern I noticed pretty quickly when I was doing my research is my experience with, like, time travel in media is very heavily anime and manga influenced.
That, like, makes sense, I think.
Yeah, like, I'll talk about it a little bit more later, but, like, Millennium Actress by Satoshi Kon and Your Name, or also known as Kimi no Nawa by Makoto Shinkai, like, they are very unique ways that people use the sort of time travel aspect, and visually very beautiful.
I'm only, like, passingly familiar with Your Name, but how do they use, I mean, you mentioned that they use this, like, the time travel in, like, a unique sort of way. Like, what would you say is different for those cases?
So, spoiler alert, if you haven't watched Your Name, I'm going to be talking about spoilers to do with it. So I apologize. Just skip over the next,
I feel like this is
going to
happen a lot. With this particular discussion.
You know, it's, the film is from 2016 at this point, so I feel like,
yeah,
you can buy it at Walmart, so it's everywhere. Basically, so the main conceit of the film is that the two main characters keep swapping bodies and waking up in each other's bodies in each other's lives and sort of, like, start communicating by leaving each other notes and navigating it like that and trying to, like, find each other. And then you find out as the film goes on that they're being connected through different time eras, and she's, like, I don't know, like, 5 years in the past from him. Like, I know that's not the exact number, but, like,
sure,
he is way behind him in time. And, like, he figures out that, like, she dies in this sort of, like, big catastrophic event. And so, like, it's about them falling in love and him doing everything possible to stop this event from killing her. And, like, at the end of the film, it's so beautiful because they end up, it's, like, years and years later after the entire conceit of the film has finished. And they're, like, walking up and down a flight of, like, stairs, like, on their, like, day. And they bump into each other and, like, they, like, make eye contact and realize, like, it's them. And it's very beautiful.
That's amazing. I love that. That reminds me, it, you know, because I was thinking about this today, like, have any of you guys seen that movie The Lake House?
With Keanu? I have seen
I have, yes. It's been a while.
That's got a similar conceit where, like, both main characters have lived in this particular house at different points in time. I think they're like 2 years apart.
Is that the one with the mailbox?
Yeah, when they when they put a letter in the mailbox, it's somehow delivering through time to the other. Yeah. And so the two of them are connected through these letters. They can write each other, even though they exist at different points in time. And I think that one also has a conceit where, like, one of the characters finds out that the other one is supposed to die before they, like, catch up in time. I don't remember how it, like, ended, but I remember it's been a long time since I've watched
They somehow find each other at the same point in time.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like, I think
this spoiler alert, like, time limits are out on that one.
Yeah.
You still get people who will talk about the Marvel movies, even the first one, go, spoilers.
I students do that all the time to me, and I tell them that the expiration date is up. Like,
yes.
Yeah. After it's been, like, 3 years, like, I expect everyone who is very interested to have seen it.
Yeah, if you cared enough to see it, you would have seen it.
Also, you can still see it and enjoy it. Like,
yeah, totally.
If a reveal is the whole point of the thing, then, like, it's probably not that great otherwise.
Exactly. So I think that time travel in, like, this instance is a really fascinating thing. It's sort of also like, God, wasn't there? There's a TV show about a character who receives tomorrow's newspaper. I think it's called Early Edition. And it's one of those, like, he keeps getting tomorrow's newspaper, and it's always like, oh my God, this disaster is going to happen tomorrow, and only he can stop it from happening because he has this precognition. Like, that also, I think, counts as a time travel story, even though the mechanic isn't about him traveling through time.
Yeah, it was a 1996 fantasy TV show, Early Edition.
I remember hearing about it when it was happening, but I never watched it. I was, like, so little.
Yeah, I don't recognize, like, anybody from it.
Yeah. Or, like, Minority Report does the same sort of thing, but I don't know if it's, like, I don't know if theirs is a window through time or if it's just a, like, based on these patterns of behavior, this person is supposed to be the one who's going to commit this crime.
I mean, I think that there's a lot of gray area with time travel. I feel like you said at the beginning of the show, like, when we think of time travel, it's very easy to be, like, Terminator, Back to the Future. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I mean, there's a lot of stuff in, like, Charmed as a TV series.
I love Charmed.
Or, like, Sabrina the Teenage Witch, like, or any, like, witch and magic based series usually has something fun with time travel in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I would say, you know, I mean, not only within the it's interesting because for me, when I think of, like, a time travel thing, especially because Back to the Future is, like, the big thing in my head.
Yeah.
It feels very, like, sci-fi, but time travel's also a thing that, like, it's a very fantastical, a very fantasy concept. Also, you get time travel in Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. You get time travel in Avengers Endgame, which I really enjoy. I actually rewatched that movie this weekend for the first time since it came out, and there is a really fantastic, Jenny, you mentioned the Hulk having a good quote about time travel, about, like, changing history, and I wrote it down when I was watching it because the Hulk talks about how you can't travel back in time and change the past and expect that to, like, change the present, the future that you're from. And his explanation is that if you travel to the past, that past becomes your future, and your former present becomes the past, which can't be changed now by your new future. Like, your timeline, your personal timeline is present, past, new present, right? It's the Back to the Future 2 thing. You go back in time, you change history, but you travel to the future, and it's a new future.
Well, and it's also like, if you go back in time and change something, that was always going to happen.
Yeah, there's
so I was gonna say that's something mm-hmm. that they play with a lot, in especially the new like HBO series for Watchmen. Like Dr. Manhattan literally is like the perfect example of a character who can see and experience all parts of time no matter what. And so like he always knows what's gonna happen. Even if he tries to change something,
yeah,
he knows that he's going to try to change the thing.
Yeah,
and that will ultimately just put him right back where he is explaining that in the first place.
You get these two different models, particularly, I think, in time travel stories, where you can do the Back to the Future thing, where it's like, oh, we're rewriting history. This is an alternate timeline now. Or you have the, like, Prisoner of Azkaban, or there's, I mentioned that German Netflix series, Dark, that I really, really like. And those are, like, they're time loops. So you go back in time to change the past, but what you're doing is you're fulfilling the past as it was always meant to happen. The actions that you take to change history are actually fulfilling history.
And that's why in things like Prisoner of Azkaban and in Endgame, right, they can't
yeah.
show themselves to their former selves.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they can't see each other because they were always there. They just didn't know it, and they can't. Spoiler, yeah. And then, you know, that's always like when the world explodes.
That's such a good moment in Endgame, and just because it's fresh in my head because I just watched it, in particular when they travel back in time to, spoilers for Avengers Endgame, they travel back to the attack on New York from the end of the first Avengers movie. And so you get that like that roundabout shot where you see all of the Avengers like gathering together on the streets, and then you pan to another street and there they are arriving at the same time.
I'm sorry, but all I can think about when I think about that particular part is when like Captain America beats the hell out of himself. Yes. And it's like, that's America's ass.
Yes.
So good. actually, Back to the Future, I think part three, or maybe it is part two. I think in part two, he's like walking around 1955, avoiding himself, who's already in 1955.
That's part two.
So you end up with like multiple iterations of the same character in the same place, having to like avoid themselves, which I always think is a really like fun sort of way to.
They did the same thing in Harry Potter as well, when they're trying to avoid themselves, especially Hermione. I was like, nope, we can't get near them.
I feel like I would be a bad partner not to, because we're talking about the Terminator a bunch, plug that David is literally right now writing a Transformers versus Terminator like series for IDW, and it's so good.
That sounds rad.
I am like absolutely biased because like we're in love, but I think it's very good. I think it's a lot of fun. And like with Transformers, like I don't know a lot about it, but I know in Beast Wars there's a lot of like time travel aspects that they use in that series.
Yeah. There's a lot of, you know, I think my preference when it comes to time travel stories is probably more the Back to the Future model. I like the agency of like giving a character, here's what you do to travel back in time. Go back and see if you can fix this thing. Future of Another Timeline does that. This Is How You Lose the Time War is kind of about that. Where like they're affecting, actually Future of Another Timeline does this really fantastically, because every time someone goes back in time and makes a change in history, that affects everyone else's recollection of like what the timeline was like. So when the group of time travelers gets together and they discuss what they remember about the timeline they came from, people have different memories because they have now lived through different experiences, because time has changed in different ways for different people. And it's fascinating. Like, only the person who is participating in the change in time can recognize that the future they travel back to is not the one they left.
Well, something I think is really interesting, and just in the, like, your placement in the time travel, and this, I put this specific film, because like I never considered Donnie Darko to be like a time travel related film, but like I read an article that someone wrote, and I'll try to link to it so we can put it in the description. It was really compelling. Like, it's time travel via like going through different parts and potential parts of Donnie's life, and then at the end you figure out like it was all going to lead to death anyways, and I just
it's almost doing the same thing that like the Back to the Future Part 2 thing does, right? Like Donnie survives at the beginning of Donnie Darko and is now in a timeline that is different from the one that he should be in, and the only way to repair the timeline is to undo the change that happened, and everything rights itself, but it's not a great ending for Donnie.
That reminds me so much of the Blake Crouch book.
Recursion. Yeah, I wanted to ask you about this one.
So
I did not read this one, but I've heard it's good. Please tell me more.
Oh God. So the book in is itself very interesting with how it deals with time travel, because time travel is not what the book is setting out to do. The main, some spoilers here. The book is about a scientist who's actually trying to create a chair that can make memories so realistic you can take like one important part of your life and relive that moment again. But because she has created it so vividly in the mind, you actually recreate the moment, you recreate the memory, which therefore triggers the time travel. So you do relive the moment for real, and then you loop back around, and then you take your life from there. So you're reliving that memory so intensely that it becomes reality because you're changing your memories to say it's reality.
That's interesting.
And so there is a loop effect, because when you go back into a memory, in where you eventually leave off, Blake Crouch has that when you eventually meet that time, that point in time that you diverged from, everyone at that exact moment that you left will remember an alternate history from everything that has changed from when you went back to that endpoint. So it's like
that's
a loop.
Crazy.
And no one, no one but the person that travels will know anything is happening until the point of departure. And then everyone just like, bam, oh my God, like ghost memories in my head.
Yeah.
And it just...
That's fascinating.
So many people start using this memory device at some point that just crazy things start happening with people's memories and brains, and like cataclysm stuff happens, and it's just crazy. Love that story.
That's cool.
Well, along those lines too, that makes me think of the whole plot line for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Like I think it's so interesting, because obviously since time is a man-made construct, then time travel is just a development off of that. And like literally like the whole thing about like the ghost memories, like there are scenes in that film that like I didn't even see it until like I think earlier this year, but like when like they are experiencing their relationship for whatever number time and like you can see ghosts of the other time that they did this exact sort of thing previously, like it's just I'm just so glad that we can't actually do stuff like that in real life. Like, I don't trust my own decision-making skills
enough.
Erasing
memories and... I actually, you know, a little unrelated, but, like, the particular Eternal Sunshine sort of thing is that, like, the actions that they took are gonna continue to happen, right? Like, that movie ends with Jim Carrey telling...
Kate Winslet?
I was gonna say Clementine because I know that's her character's name, but Kate Winslet's character, like I don't care that we've gone through this before, like I'm willing to do this again with you, and if it falls apart, like it falls apart, but like we had this time together. And there is an early draft of the script in which there is like an epilogue, and it's them at like 60 doing it again, falling in love for the first time again, because they just keep falling through the same trap of like things get bad, they decide to break it off, they erase everything, and then they fall in love again. And it's rough.
So you have to think about it then, because where they eventually leave off starts it all over again. It's almost like, well, since you went to this point, of course you're going to eventually get back to it because that's what caused you to make this action.
This is what the thing about recursion that's interesting to me is it because you're embodying like a memory and then reliving the future after that moment, there aren't two of you in the same place. Like you're embodying who you used to be.
Yes.
It's like, have you guys ever seen About Time
with Domhnall Gleeson? Yes,
I love that movie.
That movie's so good. It's so good.
It's like,
but that's that same idea. He is going back to a moment in his own personal timeline and then changing the decisions he made at that point and then following those outcomes to see how they change his future. And it's precious and I really like it.
You know, I like the 2002 Time Machine movie, the one with Guy Pearce, where it's a lot different than the book. You know, not so everyone's surprised. In that movie he creates the time machine because a love interest that wasn't in the original novel is killed, and so he was trying to go back in time and save her. However, plot twist, because she is the catalyst that makes him create the time machine, there's no way he can save her because he's using the time machine to go back. So if he saves her, there's no time machine. So time basically won't allow her to die. I mean, to live, because there will be no time machine.
I don't want to, like, spoil Dark for anyone who might be interested in it. I really, really like this show a lot.
But I don't care if you spoil
It's about causal loops, but it's essentially the same thing. The reason the time, like, spoilers for the end of Dark, but the reason that the time travel loop exists is because one of the principal characters, his family die in a car accident. And this spurs him to build a time machine to save his family. And, ends up creating its own time. He ends up creating a separate time loop, a causal loop that just keeps repeating itself. And the resolution to the series is, oh, these people are able to save this guy's kids from dying. And then he never makes the machine. And then the loop never happens in the first place. It just like unravels that whole mystery. But God, I just, that idea of like, there's a moment in season one where one of the main characters goes back in time because he's trying to find another kid who's gone missing. And he tells someone, he comes in contact with another character in the past. They're like in the 80s. And this girl is like, who are you? Like, what are you doing here? And he's like, oh, I'm trying to save somebody's life. And she asks him like, how can you do that? And he says, well,
how?
You have to find them before they're dead.
I guess that's a good way.
Yeah.
It's and
I love it.
It's really so interesting how the idea of time travel has become such a big thing in fantasy and science fiction, of course. But you have to think it didn't exist really until the novel Time Machine by H.G. Wells. Before that, it was mostly demons and you're going to other worlds, but now
the thing that's really fascinating about the time machine is it's not a story about going back in time.
No, it's going forward in time.
Yeah, and just seeing like the way that history has changed, the way that humanity has evolved and adapted.
I love that. I think it's a great idea. Like, and I feel like not enough time travel stuff really like explores that sort of like, what about going forward? Well, because especially like right now with everything like climate wise going on, like I would definitely utilize that to get a clearer picture on things.
Absolutely. Well, and so I think what Time Machine does, and there's a couple of other sci-fi stories that I think do a similar thing, like the potential for traveling forward in time, but sort of that roadblock of like, now you can't go back. And Ender's Game, the later Ender's Games books do this, where as Ender travels from planet to planet in the new like human empire that is being developed, he's traveling through space on a ship that is approaching approaching the speed of light. So speed is time is moving slower for him than it is outside. So like he ages like 30 years, but then hundreds of years have passed in history because of like that sort of theory of relativity effect. So he can't ever go back, but you know, he hasn't aged that much, but time has moved forward a very long amount of time. The Chris Rocchio Empire Silence and Howling Dark deal with travel through space in the same way, where like it takes a long time to get from planet to planet, and time might not move forward for you, but for the rest of the Empire, stuff is still happening.
I think what Becca said about you don't really see a lot of time travel forward anymore.
Yeah.
That really sparked a thought in me. I think that really is because what the time machine did was it was actually a vehicle to help people then to actually envision the future. Now we're just so used to the idea of, you know, fantastical settings that we can have a story and be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is far in the future. This is a dystopian future. This is a this, then that. That's not, we're used to it.
Sure.
But
it's different versus like sending someone to that new time period.
Correct. You're starting in the present. You're starting with what readers are familiar with. And then the vehicle is here is this future via time travel. And now we're just so used to it. And time travel has become such just typical in storytelling.
Yeah.
Like the forward thinking stuff too is something like the time machine. A lot of that has to do with like anxieties about the Industrial Revolution and the development of technology and what's going to happen next. And so now instead of like having these machines that jump us forward, we do still have movies that are like set in the future.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So it's just not about traveling.
About there, sending people to the future.
No, yeah. we don't have to.
It's about like waking up, or the movie itself is in, you know, society after global warming.
Yeah.
Right. Like, so it's different. It's kind of like, I guess maybe it was just the emphasis on the technology and the industrialization and all of that stuff makes the machine part of it so much more important.
Yeah. Do you think it's because the thing that Time Machine is dealing with really like, Time Machine jumps like 10,000 years in the future or something. And it's really focusing on like class structure. It's about how the upper and lower classes divided evolutionarily because of the amount of time that has passed. But really when we tell time travel stories now, you want to give, the idea is to like give the main character an agency of, oh, you can go back and you can change this thing or fix this thing. But like the mystery of like, what is the future? Like if there's no guarantee that you can come back from the future, I don't know. There aren't a lot of stories that I can think of in which like we send a character to the future to gather information to change the present. Like, I guess
there has to be something, but I don't remember what it is.
The only
helpful
but Futurama has kind of done that a little bit.
That's true.
You know, I love Futurama too, but like Futurama is just like the time travel is almost inconsequential to Futurama.
I disagree. Fry is his own grandpa now.
That is true. Pretty that consequential. Is true. I think the way Futurama timeline works is that Fry was always his own grandfather.
I think he went back and made a conscious decision to be his own grandfather.
Well, but that happened at Roswell, right? And the whole premise is that, like, well, we know that the Roswell incident was an alien encounter because it was the main characters. It's not like other aliens were going to crash in Roswell if the Futurama gang had not gone back in time and done it themselves.
Well, if you think about it, a lot of stories have just taken time travel and make it an element in the story, not the main focus, but just the means to drive along what they're going for, the vehicle. For example,
I think travel to the past is way more common.
Well, take, for example, the very campy Kate and Napoleon movie, if anyone remembers
that
one.
I don't know that one.
I was reading a list of unsung rom-coms, and that was on there, and I was like, I need to rewatch that.
So, I'm horrible with actors and actresses' names, but it is Wolverine. What's his name?
Okay, Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
Who? What?
Hugh Grant, or not Hugh Grant. Sorry,
Hugh Grant. Jackson, what?
Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan. Oh, well, it does have Meg
Ryan.
Leah
Schreiber is in it.
And then, but who plays Wolverine? Who plays Wolverine?
Hugh Jackman.
Thank you. And Hugh Jackman. And he is a man who is a duke in the past, and he travels forward into the modern day with Meg Ryan, who is a 21st century can-do woman. And
there was just a Netflix movie with Vanessa Hudgens.
I saw that movie too. Like Netflix's version of the Hallmark Christmas.
Yeah, it was the night before Christmas. Yeah, it's the same thing. He travels forward and meets her.
Whoa, wait, guys, has anyone seen the new Bill and Ted Face the Music?
I haven't seen it.
I'm pretty sure that they travel forward in time.
The first two Bill and Ted's do have portions that take place in the far-flung future. It's like that is the result of them.
So I'm just gonna say this. I've been seeing the trailer advertisement for it on TikTok a lot. And like the whole conceit is that like Keanu Reeves's character, you know, of Ted is like, what if we just go to the future where we've already made like the best song ever? Like we don't have to wait for ourselves to do it. We can just go now.
And cheat.
Yeah.
That's
the ultimate cheat code.
That's literally how the climax of the first two Bill and Ted's work also is the like, well, when we're done this, we'll go back in time and remind ourselves to do this thing so that it works out for us perfectly.
Oh my God.
And then like the thing is already done. Like in the first one, they're trying to sneak into the police station. He's like, oh, what we'll do is we'll use the time machine to come back to this moment. We'll set up a recording to distract my dad so he'll leave his office. And then the recording just goes off. Like, we haven't seen them do it. It's just presumed that they will have done it.
That reminds me of a section of game in The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. When you Link and you have to go to a windmill. After learning you have to go in the past, and then you have to play a musical song that will destroy the windmill, basically, but you only learn it in the future when you learn of the kid that played it and destroyed the windmill. So it's this whole big thing, like, wait a minute, I'm the kid who did that, but I'm learning about it from me. Wait, what?
these fixed timelines where you're fulfilling things that have already happened.
Yeah,
So speaking of fixed timelines, and I thought of this earlier, Gary, when you were talking about like the loop timeline thing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I mean, we would be remiss to not talk about Groundhog's Day.
Yeah.
But a better version of that movie, because for some reason that movie, like, I think it's good, but it kind of irritates me.
Yeah.
The new movie Palm Springs on Hulu.
Oh my God. Palm Springs is so good.
The cast, like, it's J.K. Simmons, Peter Gallagher, Tyler Hoechlin, Camila Mendes, Andy Samberg, Kristen Bellotti. It is so good, and it's such a good, like, representation of like the stages of like emotional like turmoil, grief, and acceptance you go through, like, where it doesn't matter what the consequences are if every day is exactly the same forever.
There is a Netflix series that I really, really like with Natasha Lyonne called Russian Doll.
It is also
the same kind of thing where like she keeps dying and then re-waking up the night of her birthday. And she's trying to figure out like what is causing this loop to keep happening. Why does she keep coming back to this moment? How do we unravel this? Which I really enjoyed.
Well, if we're going to talk about time loops, we have to definitely bring up the ultimate time loop movie, Groundhog Day.
Yeah.
With Bill Murray.
Absolutely. You know, I've only seen Groundhog Day once.
Oh,
that's enough.
Yeah.
I've only seen it
a couple times.
As much as I love Bill Murray, I'm with you, Becca.
It's one of those
words. Tom Cruise is so good.
Yeah, I think it gets a huge rep because of the nature. I mean, people refer to time loops stories as being like Groundhog Day now. Like, that's just the go-to touchstone for this style of storytelling.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the biggest appeal of Groundhog's Day was because Bill Murray's character was such a jerk. And then he basically lived lifetimes learning, like, yeah, don't be a jerk, like, through actual emotional and like experiences that he had to
do. I don't care if we spoil this. How does he solve the loop in that one?
He doesn't. He's a better person. He gets the girl that he didn't even know he wanted until having all these different like lives he lived in the one day. Uh-huh. And then the next day just happens.
It just happens.
I think it was like the whole Beauty and the Beast Rose thing where he just gets like silently cursed and then true love's kiss, then bam.
Can I spoiler alert for Palm Springs? Can I spoil it? So spoiler alert, I will say, like, please don't listen to this if you haven't watched it since it is so new, but they literally, like, the film, like, so Andy Samberg is already, like, stuck in this time loop, and he accidentally...
You have no idea how long he's been there.
He, like, accidentally drags in the girl with him into it, and so she ends up in the time loop, and, like, after, I don't know, what seems like an insane amount of time of existing in it, she decides that she's going to start spending her time learning quantum physics. And, like, she, like, eventually, like, figures out, like, if we just, like, go in at this exact time and blow ourselves up, it'll destroy this time loop. And it works.
That's amazing.
Oh, my
God. This is crazy.
Russian Doll solves this by, it turns out that Natasha Lyonne's character is not the only one trapped in this loop. The first time that she died, in the first episode before she like traveled back to the beginning of her birthday, she met someone else who also went on to die that night. And turns out that both of them are trapped in the same loop.
Ah.
And so they break the loop by saving each other's lives.
That's kind of beautiful.
By like reliving that first day. Yeah. And going through the same motions that they went through the first time so that when they interact with each other, they can be the one to protect the other person, which then allows time to progress forward now that the two of them are together, that have saved each other. There's supposed to be another season of that, and I have no idea how they're going to do another season of that show, but really like that story a lot.
Shannon Maguire's middle game has a very interesting sort of time loop going on. You don't really get to see all the loops, but the way she writes it, you do see glimpses of futures and how they do end, and then the main characters basically force themselves back willingly into the loop again to actually correct any mistakes they would have done wrong.
That's fascinating.
So it's basically time travel with science and magic, almost like an alchemy. And the main characters can control the time travel, but one, they don't know it and it's accidental, or two, when they finally get a hang of it, it might be too late and they're like, okay, time to go back again. And they're pretty much doing like a Doctor Strange but they're living all of it until they eventually get it right.
Yeah.
And that was,
can I tell you guys something? I haven't seen Doctor Strange because Benedict Cumberbatch kind of scares me.
Oh, what? That's really good though.
And also, I've seen every other film except for like Thor Dark World because I have no desire. I've heard it's terrible.
Yeah, you're okay and, not seeing that one.
I don't feel like I missed out. I love that. I mean, I'm going to probably watch Dark World just because Loki's in it and that's my baby. Yeah. But because I know stuff about Doctor Strange from the comics and stuff, like the little bit of like his backstory that leaks into like Avengers was inconsequential to me. Like there wasn't anything about. Yeah, I was like, oh, I know who this lady is. Like, yeah, they changed how she looks, but
the final fight in Doctor Strange between Stephen Strange and Dormammu is one of my favorite things that they've done in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. In just that, like, he's willing to sacrifice himself to just keep reliving the moment of his death. Like, he traps both himself and Dormammu in this fight. Like, he dies, he rewinds time, both of them recognize it's happened, but Dormammu can't, like, fight him and win. It's just going to keep resetting. So now they're both stuck. It becomes like a stalemate in this really kind of fascinating way. And it's also fun because I think that Benedict Cumberbatch is also the voice of Dormammu, so he's fighting with himself. It's
great. Gosh.
Oh, that's great. Super cool.
Yeah.
Like, I'll probably see it because, like, I won't lie to you guys. Something
There's
about
a lot of good stuff and isn't it?
Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange, to my brain, does not register the same as Benedict Cumberbatch otherwise.
Yeah. You know, we're too far into this episode to not have talked about Doctor Who yet.
That's a good point. I'm surprised we haven't mentioned that sooner.
Well, because I think...
Sorry for my pain scream. I just really, really love Doctor Who. I'm not a, like, big Whovian, but, like, yeah. I really love, like, the whole conceit of it. I love that, like, it from the start gave itself this out to, like, very much make it, like, change it up. Like, if it's to, like, avoid ever going stale, like.
Yeah. And then, you know, there are moments. They make it clear that there are moments in time that even he cannot change.
She agrees.
Yeah,
sorry.
You're fine.
No, Amelia's just really excited about Doctor Who. It's okay.
As we'll she fine. Should be.
I mean, I'm told, I will admit, I haven't really seen Doctor Who.
Yeah.
But there is an Amelia character, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Amelia Pond. She's fantastic.
I'm just going to be super controversial here and say of all the new Doctors, like, I've only seen David Tennant's. Like, through the entirety, because...
He's great.
The other, like, dude... I don't know, he pisses me off.
Aww.
I don't know if that's controversial. I feel like David Tennant is everyone's favorite.
What is the older gentleman's name that played him?
Chris Eccleston.
I think he's...
Or more recent, Peter Capaldi was after... Max.
Yeah, I think that Peter Capaldi is the hottest Doctor, and I will die on that hill.
Well, I will be.
He's good. Great.
I will be a little bit controversial and say I think for a lot of people, getting into Doctor Who is a little bit daunting just because there's so much of it. It's like,
oh, yeah. I just, like, my mom was watching it on, like, the BBC, and I just, like, was sitting next to her, and that's how I got into it.
Yeah.
I think I think it has the comic book complex, where because there's so much history and there's so much, anyone who's just trying to get into it now is like, well, where do I start?
I think, yeah, and I think it's tough, right? Like, Doctor Who has been around for, God, 55 years at this point, I think. And it's hard to be, well, man, a lot of those episodes you can't find. A lot of the old episodes are just, like, unavailable.
Nah, you can find them if you find the fans.
That's true, but there's still a lot of those that are just gone. Like, there's just episodes that are missing.
I think this is good advice to give. If any of you listening right now are interested in getting into something like Doctor Who or, like, comics, and you find them daunting, I have the foolproof plan for you. Find an artist or a writer, or in this case for, like, Doctor Who, an actor that you really like, and start there. And then from there, pick up other stuff. With the comics, 100%. It can be a really easy domino effect of, you like this artist, so you read their run of one comic, then you go on to whatever their next work was. Then you find a writer you like, and you can just bounce around. Like, I don't subscribe to the whole, like, you have to start at a certain point to be a real comic fan. Like, you can start wherever you want, because comics are a shit show, and everything is going to change again in a year anyways.
So, like, I've tried, and so my problem with Doctor Who, I have not just tried to start with a random Doctor, but, like, of the new era of Doctors, the first episode, which I've seen a couple times now, has, like, mannequins that come to life in it.
Yep.
They are spooky!
Just so people know, I'm very afraid of mannequins.
Aww. Oh, I didn't know that.
Out a lot. And so, like, not that they're super scary in Doctor Who, but I'm like, I don't know if this is
still unsettling.
Yeah, like,
also, I think the thing too about like about Doctor Who that can be a little like of a turnoff for people trying to get into the newer stuff is the show suffers from the same issue that Harry Potter does, where Stephen Moffat is an ass and was super duper sexist, especially about the Doctor becoming a woman, and very much fought it tooth and nail. And so like people get a bad taste in their mouth when they like look it up and see all of the like really cringy stuff that he had to say for years until they were like, you know what, Stephen?
I think that that's the thing that Doctor Who also has like working for it, is the fact that it's been going on for so long. You get whole new crews that come in. So like the showrunner is someone new now. The main directors are new people now.
Oh yeah, it's totally new people.
And so like you could pick it up with the current Doctor and be fine, because each of those stories are very standalone. I think even the fact that the Doctor can travel through time is not like the biggest factor in like how those stories are told.
Oh, I know where you should start. Watch the episode with Picasso in it. If that doesn't make you love the show, nothing will.
I love that episode, but it's so sad. Van Gogh, right? That's what you're thinking of.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Yeah.
Wow, I'm not an art major.
Van Gogh.
I'll let my professors hear this.
There's a lot of Doctor Who. I think suffers from the like. There are a lot of really great episodes, and there are a lot of really not so great episodes.
Anything that runs for 55 years, that's going to have that problem. Yeah. I think
absolutely.
So, speaking of things that we're like, 49 minutes into this episode and I haven't yelled about yet, I can't go through the rest of a time travel episode and not talk about what I will say is the best time travel story to have ever existed. I'm extremely biased because it is Inuyasha. I love Inuyasha so much because it is literally a time travel show about a 15-year-old girl who just jumps through a magical well whenever she damn well pleases and is either in modern day Tokyo or in feudal era Japan. And like now there's going to be a spin-off show about like the next generation of like kids, and like I'm just really excited. I think that it's such a good, unique, like, I've never consumed another piece of time travel media that deals with it like that. And I just
actually did not know that Inuyasha even had, like, a time travel element to it.
That is the whole thing. Like, Kagome, like, falls through the well on accident in the first episode and finds a guy that's like pinned to a tree and he has like dog ears, so she's like, what the hell, and like ends up pulling this like magical arrow out of his chest, and you later learn she's like the reincarnation of a high priestess from the feudal era that like he was in love with. And it's such a fun story, and like seeing him go through the well the other way into modern day Japan and like be a dog demon, like it is hysterical. He's in like feudal era garb and like a baseball cap to hide his like ears. I just think it was my first like real fandom, and like I literally have a tattoo of one of the cats from the show. And amazing. I just think it's a lot of fun. It's a great love story. I could go on forever.
Do the things they do in the past change her present? The modern day Tokyo stuff. Interesting.
Literally, like, they have nothing to do with one another, which is, like, so weird, but...
Well...
Okay, I'm definitely showing my inner fandom for this series as well. There was the episode where they do get the shard from the future because of a mask that her grandfather finds.
You're absolutely right.
So, typically, no. The future and the past really don't do a lot with each other. But there's a couple episodes, especially when...
Yeah.
And it's just more like, oh, look, this is fun because you're going to the modern day Inuyasha, and they have a couple. Like, they had...
So they're really just two separate settings for the most part.
Yeah,
that's why I'm really excited about this spinoff. Nick, I don't know if you've like looked much into it, but Yashahime Princess Half Demon is going to be about like their kids, and like in it, Sesshomaru, who is Inuyasha's brother, has twins, but one twin is stuck in the modern era, and one is stuck in the feudal era, and so like. Obviously, like, they have to have some sort of effect on one another in this new spinoff series, like, as far as the times go, so I'm excited.
That'd be really interesting to see how they work with that, yeah.
I just want to know who the mother of Sesshomaru's kids is.
I hope it's not the little girl that's, like, his Rin? Apprentice. I hope it's not Rin.
Oh. I don't know how I feel.
I don't know how we would feel, too, about that. Anyway, let's get off of that topic.
I am a fan of stories in which a character travels back in time and changes something, and you see the implication, the outcome of like the change that they made when they travel back. And like, I don't need that to be like a big dramatic change all the time. But I always find it fascinating when a character like returns to the present and like things about the present are different than when they left.
I think Back to the Future, going back to that one, yeah. That one had really interesting and subtle changes. Like when they first start in Back to the Future 1, the mall is called Two Pines.
Yes! Mm-hmm.
And then when he goes back in time, he accidentally hits one of the two trees in that like field. Uh-huh. And then they go back to the present. It's Lone Pine Mall at that point.
I love like little touches like that. On the other end of the spectrum, when you have like very dramatic change, have any of you guys read, there's a short story by, I think it's by Bradbury, called The Sound of Thunder?
Yes.
No. Sound of Thunder is about, they have developed time travel to the past. And so wealthy patrons can go back in time and hunt dinosaurs. The premise is that they have gone and they have created, here are the paths that you can walk along when you're in the past so that you don't like affect anything that's here. These dinosaurs that have been specifically marked are ones that are about to die anyway. So if you kill them, it's not going to change anything in the timeline. Be very, very careful. And they go back in time and one of the characters steps on a butterfly. And the guy who's their guide is like, look, if we go back and things are different, like,
you're going like, to kick your ass, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And they travel back to the future and like a different person is the president now. And like things have monumental consequential changes. And it ends with the dude who stepped on the butterfly getting shot.
I just did you mention what year it's set in? Because it's also set in 2055. So it's like, I think it's a really fun like story because it's set in a future. So it's time travel for us to like put ourselves in the future setting and then goes back into the past. And I just think that's fun. I like it when time travel stories are set in two different time eras that I couldn't have existed through.
Yeah.
Absolutely. My goodness. I just realized that the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, they actually, they did that. They took that story. Because Homer accidentally goes to the past, steps on a butterfly, and there's a whole bunch of different things in the future. And he goes back.
Stuff that changes,
And he keeps killing different things to try to balance it out.
have any of you guys watched Steven Universe?
Who?
Unfortunately, no.
Steven Universe. A really, really great time travel.
I've watched every single episode.
Where Steven...
I was like, Becca has to be joking.
Steven finds a thing that allows him to travel through time, but his only goal, all he wants, is to be able to like perform at some like concert at the beach. And he goes back in time and stops himself from like interacting with his father for some reason, and then continues to go back in time and unwrite the things he's already done until there's like a bunch of him. There's like multiple iterations of Steven, and they all start fighting with each other about like who the original Steven is and how do we prevent this from happening. And it's
How did that get resolved? I don't remember how that episode
they,
I feel like Garnet must be the one that's like...
That episode ends with the original Steven going back to when he first found the device and then shattering the device. And then all of the multiple iterations of Steven dissolve before poor young Steven's eyes.
Ugh.
It's devastating. It's rough.
I love that series so much.
It's so good. The pilot episode, actually, the very first episode of the show, the unaired pilot had a time travel element to it. Using that same exact device, actually.
Yeah. I feel like that's why it showed back up.
I think so, too.
Yeah, I love Steven Universe. It's fun.
Same.
Gay rocks. I love them.
They're great. I don't know, man. There's so many different like versions of the time travel story that exist outside of just Back to the Future.
I'm not gonna go into depth about it just because we're about to hit an hour of recording, but I really, really recommend Millennium Actress by Satoshi Kon. Satoshi Kon also did Paprika and Perfect Blue and Tokyo Godfathers.
Paprika's great.
Yeah, so obviously the same very beautiful animation style, very gorgeous storytelling. It's a filmmaker and his like friend come and they're doing a documentary about a famous Japanese actress, Chiyoko Fujiwara. Mm. And as she tells them about her life and the different roles that she's had, she embodies those like moments in her life again, and like you and the documentary creator and the like film, like the guy that's filming it, experience it like in person. Like they're there in like feudal era Japan with her, and they're there on set with her, and it is such a I recommend everything that Satoshi Kon has ever done, because it's so stunning. It's a beautiful, unique version of time travel, because at the end she like thanks the documentary maker for helping her relive those like old memories, and it brings you to a question where you have to ask yourself, like, did they really like go through these things, or was it just like, you know, just this beautiful dramatization of her like memories and her storytelling. And it really, like, discusses how memories are a form of time travel.
I find that fascinating.
I accidentally talked about it the full way.
That's fine.
And then hence recursion. Hence recursion.
Yeah. It's doing the same. I mean, I mentioned it when you brought up recursion originally, but Butterfly Effect with Ashton Kutcher is about affecting his perception of his memories, and by changing his memory of the event, he's changing the outcome, and the future is different because of what he did in his own past.
It's really funny because I think about that Simpsons episode, people usually associate it with the Butterfly Effect and not with Bradbury's story, just because the Butterfly Effect is very obviously, you know, it has the word butterfly in it, and it's, well, and that's very what, like that's famous
word. I mean, the concept is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ray Bradbury and Ashton Kutcher don't necessarily have the same crowd.
not usually. I guess
not always.
To both of those crowds.
I'm sure there's some overlap, but
hello.
90s
everyone
Ashton
here
Kutcher.
Right now.
Yeah.
Man, would a Christmas Carol be considered a time
I was
going to
say
yes!
Christmas Carol.
Yes.
Yeah, I just thought of that.
When we were talking about, like, we don't see people going to the future to fix the present.
Yeah,
that happens in A Christmas Carol. Well, I mean, it's older, so it's not like it's a contemporary one when we were talking about that before. But that is, you know, I mean, assuming that Scrooge doesn't lose it again.
Yeah, using the future to scare you almost half to death to change your ways.
It's a great tactic.
The other kind of, I don't know if this is just a trend to shout out in time travel lit that I like a lot, or that I see a lot, it's when kind of the characters go back in time to like encounter historical figures.
Yes.
And so, like, maybe it's just because I love, like,
are we
we're
like
all book people, right? Like, well, that is one of them. And like, that, you know, first of all, there's so many great jokes about the authors that he meets that are like really not super well-known modernists, but that's a whole nother thing. But that happens too in Deborah Harkness's books too, The Discovery of Witches, and the second one they go back in time to meet Christopher Marlowe and deal with him. And I know there's more of that. I'm having trouble blanking on them right now, but like the idea of traveling back in time to meet a writer or an actor, or like in Outlander, right? They always are encountering like you know, huge political figures, and they're like at a bar or something.
Well, that's like, that's the thing that I think that Doctor Who deliberately does like all the time, right? Like Becca earlier mentioned that one of the best episodes, in my opinion, of the Matt Smith era is the Vincent Van Gogh one. But there's also, there's a really fantastic Charles Dickens episode that that David Tennant is in. Or, no, I think it's a Shakespeare episode, actually.
Yeah. You know what? I would absolutely love to time travel. I don't care if I'm irresponsible. I just want to go tell Kurt Cobain that he was a non-binary icon to me.
Oh, what a hero. Would you, okay, actually, I guess transitioning a little bit, if you could time travel, would you want to?
Yes, for that one reason I just said.
Yeah. I would want to. I would want to be able to come back, probably.
Yeah.
I would totally time travel. Like, I'm sorry, like, and back to Midnight in Paris, I would totally want to be in Paris in the 40s and the 30s, because that was a crazy scene, and it was just like art everywhere and awesomeness, and I would be there in a second.
I'm so split.
Just
because there's also like the one side of me like, oh yeah, that'd be so cool to go and, you know, like Jenny was saying, live this past that I never got to experience, but it seemed like fun. To right a wrong that I think I could have, you know, should have changed my life. But then two, well, what if I really screw things up? Like, I would only go back to the past if I was going to, okay, this is my present, I'm going to live here now. That's the only time I would time travel.
If I could go back in time and, like, grab young Stan Lee, rest in peace, by the shoulders and be like, don't say that you made all of this stuff that you didn't make. It will make a lot of your friends mad. I would just stay there and get that good Gene commercial money that Rob Liefeld got.
I mean, yeah, and I could totally make some investments for sure.
God, what was that? Wasn't there a movie that came out recently about a guy who wakes up and he wakes up in a world where the Beatles never existed?
Yesterday.
Oh yeah.
I love that movie. That movie is very good.
I've never watched it. Like a dream.
It's so good. I have seen it multiple times so far, and I love it.
I'll have to check that out. But that sounds fascinating.
The not other one that I thought you were gonna say was, I think it's called like An American Pickle that came out.
Yeah, I wanna see that. Rogen. That's the Seth Rogen one. Yeah.
Yeah.
Into a pickle vat, and he gets pickled and he wakes up like 200 years later preserved.
Wait, so
like Encino Man.
Yeah, no, it's I quite enjoyed it.
What happens in Yesterday?
So
he invents the Beatles. I don't think that's true. Doesn't he like start playing their music?
So what happens is there's like this weird solar thing that happens.
Power,
and like at the moment that this happens, he is riding his bike and he gets hit by a bus, and so somehow he and there's a couple other people that you meet throughout the film, like they don't experience what gets, or like things get universally wiped from memory. So the Beatles is one. I think it's Coke, like Coca-Cola gets eliminated because he keeps asking for a Coke and his mom is like, what are you talking about? And like she only will bring him Pepsi the whole time. So that's a gag. Like, Harry Potter is gone, by the way.
Great.
But like, so he's a musician and like his friends get him a guitar as like a present for getting hit by a bus, and so he starts singing the Beatles song, and they're like, "That's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard."
Oh my god!
And he's like, "What are you talking about?"
He becomes rich.
He does, but it's nice. Like, it doesn't. That's watching funny. It, I didn't know how I could be, like, satisfied with the ending of the movie. Because I was like, what are they going to do? Like, he's just going to, like, it's really good, though. I don't know. They're just very, it's incredibly sweet. I was the ending was unexpected in a good way, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Do you think, it sounds almost like the like, Mandela effect idea of, like, we're now in a timeline where stuff about our history has changed and we can't explain it. Like the
Berenstain Bears. It has always been the Berenstain Bears. Uh-huh. Always. I don't care what anyone says.
Berenstain. With an A. It's
Berenstain. Oh, all I was going to say is I really like this idea of a world without the Beatles because not only would it eliminate a whole insufferable subset of men, but also, like, I feel like when you're, like, younger, you're like, yeah, haha, Yoko broke up the band. And then as you get older, you're like, wait a minute, Yoko is actually probably one of the Yoko's only good people.
Yeah.
Like, Yoko and Ringo Starr are the only two ones Ringo's where I'm like, you're fine in my book. Uh-huh. Paul, you're on thin ice.
I love Paul. But there is... Well, so, like, there's certain things that don't happen because the Beatles don't happen. It doesn't mean that the people of the Beatles are gone. We'll just say that.
Interesting. That's fun. I'll have to watch that one. That's definitely been on my list too. For a while.
But I really like it.
Great.
And Ed Sheeran is in it. And this made me love Ed Sheeran because he doesn't take him. I feel like he has a really good sense of humor about himself.
Yeah, I agree.
And it shows very well in this movie.
That's
well. Now I'm excited because I'm not his biggest fan. Like I think he's a little much. So.
I was like relatively ambivalent towards him, and then like he was in that episode of Game of Thrones, and I was like, this is so weird.
Oh yeah.
But he's in this movie, and he's in a lot of it actually. Like he kind of like quote unquote discovers the guy, and is like the one that kind of helps him become more famous, and introduces him to Kate McKinnon and.
Amazing.
He's both very sweet and also like a caricature of himself in a douchey way. Like one of his songs is his ringtone.
Nice.
That's amazing.
Oh my gosh.
So
I love him for that.
It's very good. It's very endearing, I guess, to me.
I think that this is a good spot for us to say what we are currently reading. What do you think, Gary?
I think so. I feel like there are more little threads that I can pull on, but it's not something that I think is necessary for this episode. Maybe we'll talk about time travel again in the future at some point. I don't need to sit here and talk about Star Wars Rebels or...
Oh my god, you didn't talk about Star Wars at all!
Well, I didn't because I can only think of one instance of time travel in Star Wars, and I don't think it counts as time travel. Maybe spoilers for Star Wars Rebels, I'll touch on it very, very quickly. They do a thing in season 4 of Rebels where Ezra Bridger, the main like Jedi character, enters a space that is sort of like outside of time. And he's able to reach in and pull somebody out of history into the like nega space that he's in. But they don't return to his time together. Like, I don't think it counts as time travel because the character whose history he affected goes back to the timeline she left.
Let me offer you this. All of the Star Wars movies are in this sequential order of time, so watching them is like its own version of time travel. I'm in a philosophy class this semester.
Have you tried the machete order for watching the movies? Have you heard of that? The machete order is you watch episode 4 and 5, So you get the reveal of who Anakin Skywalker is. People skip Phantom Menace. I think you should still do it. Watch episodes 2 and 3. Watch the fall of Anakin. And then you go back and watch Return of the Jedi and see the almost fall of Luke. Because it models his father's art from those from episodes 2 and 3. And so by shaking up the order you watch the films in, you suddenly get a different experience of like the arcs these characters are going through. Which I think is fascinating.
I like it conceptually, but I hate how I've never watched them
in that order.
Yeah, I hate all of these, like, well, this, you should watch it this way. Well, this is the way to watch Star Wars.
Sometimes because I rewatch Star Wars all the time, sometimes I'll shake it up and watch it in a different like sequence, but it, you know, Star Wars is Star Wars for me. I feel like the thing I like about Star Wars is you can just dip into any point in the story and consume it and be fine.
Yeah. I'm just going to say it. My preferred way of watching Star Wars is just turning on The Last Jedi for the 30th time in a row. Watch Adam Driver be hot.
Yes. Oh my gosh.
I love that movie so much.
It's so good.
But yeah, I think that's all the time travel shenanigans I have for this particular... No, wait. I'm sorry. I have one more question.
Damn it, Gary.
I'm sorry. I just thought about this. When the kids disappear in Narnia into the cup.
No, it's not time travel.
Oh.
And time changes time moves differently in Narnia than it does in the real world.
Yeah.
So they return. It's been years for them, but they return and no time has passed. Is that time travel?
I don't think so. I think it's the same as, like, what is that Christopher Nolan one, Interstellar?
I think Interstellar is time travel.
I disagree.
I think it's more like Ender's Game in some respects.
I was going to say, if it... The relative... Sure.
Yeah, it's a relativity effect. But I mean, in the Ender's Game case, I would say that he is traveling through time.
Well, I would say maybe it's not time travel in the first Narnia, but when they come back in Prince Caspian... And now they're at a Narnia that is, again, like, even farther in the future. Then they're time traveling to a different Narnia.
Well,
I would agree with that.
Well, right? I think that's
like
just
there's
because...
now 2 points in the Narnia timeline.
I think that it's interesting, right? Because on the one hand, you have time is moving slowly for the observer and faster in the rest of the world. So that sort of counts as time travel to the future in the Ender's Game sense. But in the other direction...
When the Flash runs really fast and time is moving at a different pace for him, is he traveling through time every time?
I think this could open up such a huge wormhole because, like, the idea of time passing differently in different dimensions is all over the place.
That is super construct.
Common.
The thing that I keep thinking of in this case, they do a similar thing. They do a similar thing in the Jen Lyons Chorus of Dragons books. There is a location in that series that exists outside time. And so in the first book, one of the main characters is taken prisoner and is kept on this island for months. But when he returns to the city he's from, it's only been like a couple of hours. And I would say that also still counts as time travel. He lived those months, even though it hasn't passed in the real world. But I don't know.
I think that's a slippery slope.
Exactly. There's a weird...
Like, you can't see Angel time traveled on Buffy. Like, every time Buffy goes to a hell dimension, time moves slower there. But that doesn't make it... travel.
Yeah, I guess if they're not affecting the actual like timeline of history.
Yeah, let me specify. Like when the Flash runs so fast that time changes, like he ends up in a different time era, that is time travel. But when if I drop a cup of coffee and the Flash grabs it before it hits the ground, we're still existing in the same like part of time.
It's not moving between 2 points in time. It's moving in the same points in the timeline that is slowing down.
And teleportation time travel.
No.
Unless you're going to a different point in time.
That's why it's called something else.
Yeah, I see it as traveling through space.
there is the whole too, like,
but you're, I mean, erasing this, the time.
The question then is, how much time do you have to travel to make it time travel? Because like in All the Birds in the Sky, I was talking about this last night. I've forgotten. I was like, there's no time travel in that. And then in the description of the book, he's like, they talk about a 1 minute time machine. And I was like, oh yeah, there's a time machine that only moves for 1 minute at a time. Like, so is, or a 1 second time machine. So like it can take a second.
I think that counts.
I think it counts because, again, back to my flashpoint, it's not that he is time traveling because he's just stretching. He's just stretching out into the milliseconds of a second, and those are moving at a slower rate for him with his power. But like, if he moved into the next second of time before the rest of us did, that would be time travel.
Okay. He's still... He, because of the speed he's moving, time appears to move slower, but he's still progressing forward in time.
Yes, it's just,
it's not standing still.
It's at it. It's at the same. What about, it's at the same progression as you and I?
So,
but it's not at the same frame count as you and I.
What about there was a Disney Channel movie called Clock Stoppers, in which the kids had a watch that would would slow down time to the point that motion through time is almost non-existent. And they could do stuff in that frozen time before they, like, unfroze it. Does that count as time travel?
No.
For them, they're experiencing
that
time moving.
That just makes me now think of...
But the rest of history is not.
But
yeah. I don't know.
Well, that's stopping time, but not necessarily...
Yeah, I think the reveal of the movie is they're not fully stopping time, and that's how they, like, defeat the bad guy or whatever, but... I just for whatever reason I just remembered that in the same sort of vein as like the Flash moving through time. He's experiencing time at a different rate than the rest of us are, but he's still experiencing time.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. Time travel's weird, you guys. Turns out.
Sure is.
Who knew?
I did.
Fair. I have lots of recommendations. I'll shove all of the books and movies and everything that we brought up in the description for folks who are listening and want to check out all the stuff that we discussed. I'm sorry about the spoilers for some of them, but that's just how it goes when you're talking about a story that doesn't take place in linear time. Okay. Becca, how do you feel? Oh, we should talk about what we've been reading. What's everyone been reading? Go back to what we asked 10 minutes ago. Yes, how's it going?
Oh, hot.
Yeah?
No, yeah, it's going good. I'm only like 2 pages in. I'm not gonna... I don't really...
Wait, what is that?
The new Thrawn book.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I couldn't hear for a second.
I'm stoked. I have that as my next audiobook to listen to, so I'm probably gonna start that this week. Very excited. Let's talk all about Thrawn soon.
Yeah, we might... even do a Patreon episode where we only talk about that.
Yo, we gotta get
there. Should be
on
an
that
EU
one.
Episode
that would be dope,
like in the honor of the Mandalorian.
That would be like very that. Fun. Oh man, that's only a month away. We should talk about doing a Star Wars Patreon episode, please.
Later. Nick, Jenny, what are you reading?
I am reading a forthcoming mystery thriller book called The Last to See Her by Courtney Evan Tate. So far, I'm liking it. Comes out December 15th.
Nice.
I am reading The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue.
Ooh.
By V. Schwab, which I'm about halfway through. And I am really, really loving it. It's different than her other books. It's very different than the Darker Shade of Magic books.
Okay.
That's exciting.
To me, which I also loved those, but like... I don't know that. I don't know how else to put it, and I don't mean this in a claiming way, but The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue is very much like a Jenny book.
Nice.
Where there's like timelessness. There is. It's not time travel, right? But
yeah,
there's a. She lives for 300 years at the point of the book, right? And so they go back in time, and then you know some authors show up. Speaking of like when I like when that happens. Yeah. Like hanging out with like Voltaire and Diderot and
I think it's amazing. Fair to call it a Jenny book because calling it a Jenny book just means that it's for very successful, smart women know a lot of stuff. No.
But there's romance.
There we go.
Parentheses, also romance.
Yeah, exactly.
Parentheses, the Jenny book.
That's great. But yes, highly recommend.
Fantastic. Becca, what are you reading?
I already told you.
Oh, yeah, Chaos Rising. I guess it's my turn.
You already said what you were reading, I thought.
I'm finishing up Memory of Souls. That's the Jen Lyons, the third one in the Chorus of Dragons series. I'm going to start Chaos Rising, but I haven't yet.
Oh.
And I think I want to start reading Midnight Library, the new Matt Haig. I really, really loved his book, How to Stop Time, from a couple years ago. A lot of what Matt Haig has done has been like self-help books and stuff like that. So whenever he puts out a book that's like a fiction story, it's really wrestling a lot with like psychotherapy in a way that I really like.
I really want to start reading something spooky. I've already bought like $200 worth of new Halloween like decorations. So
I'm gonna read the new Jonathan Mayberry, the Don't Turn Off the Lights or something like that. Is that what that's called?
Oh, the one that we were talking about on the minisode, the anthology.
Yeah. I want to read that.
Becca, I think have you read Her Body and Other Parties?
No.
I highly recommend that. I was thinking about it earlier because Kelly was asking. I'm going to write it down right now. But it's short stories. They are spooky. They are fantastic.
What is it called?
Spooky.
Her Body and Other Parties.
Okay.
The longish story is like basically a retelling of or a rewriting of all of the episode synopses of Law and Order SVU for the first 12 seasons.
Wow.
And like it creates an alternate narrative where there's like alternate Benson and Stabler who are creepy. It's amazing. The first story is a retelling of like the scary stories to tell in the dark with the green ribbon.
Oh, yeah.
And I love that one. That one's probably my favorite, but they're really good.
I love lady-forwarded horror because the other thing I was going to say, but I thought maybe it was too spooky, is I would definitely go back in time to, like, see if all of the rumors and, like, stories about Elizabeth Bathory are real.
Mm. Amazing.
If you guys don't know her, if you're 18 or older, you can definitely look it up.
Other spooky, I recently finished, like, right, I think it was the last book I read before Addie LaRue, but it's called Ring Shout by P. Jelly Clark, and that one's coming out in October, and it's really, really, really good and
like exciting.
Monster hunting the KKK, basically.
A horror adjacent book that I read literally between the time that we recorded our last minisode and today. I got Fangs, the new Sarah Anderson.
It's so good.
It's like the most beautiful book I own to date, I think. Sorry, Thrawn book.
It's so good.
Like, I know that like the whole like vampire and werewolf dating thing has been done, but this was so fresh.
I don't care. I loved it.
Everything that Sarah Anderson does is perfect to me. She's such a gem.
I love her.
We should outro.
We should outro.
Yeah, an hour and a half in.
Oh, you intro. Do you want me to outro? I can outro.
Yeah, you already started with the TBRs.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, Jenny and Nick, for being here and indulging me in this time travel episode. Of course, thank you to Austin Farmer, who has allowed us to use the track Kill the Farm Boy from his album Bookshelf Symphony Orchestra. You can find that on Spotify, YouTube, wherever. Please go and show Austin your support. You can find us online at Mist Galaxy Books. That's on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, Mist Galaxy Books. You can order any of the books that we discussed in today's episode in the episode description or on our website at mistgalaxy.com.
And also, you can finally come check out our new Patreon, which has been keeping me away from the full episodes, but I'm back and fully ready, baby. Check us out, patreon.com/missedgalaxybooks.
Including the link to that in the episode description, of course, for anyone who wants to find that more easily. But please go and pledge your support. We're going to have some bonus content for not only the podcast, but for all sorts of other stuff on there as well. So check that out and come back Tuesday for the next minisode.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll see you again soon in a galaxy not so far away.